and welcome to episode 188 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the Red Mass from Mars, and this week I'm joined by the creator of the superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And he's joining us this week via satellite link from his extensive billionaire's vineyard in the south of France. It's Tony Esmond.
Spain, and I've got man flu.
I didn't want to give it away. I don't want to let people know where you are.
Think of all the fans.
I know. You know, all the paps. Yeah. All the paps that are like trying to get pictures of you.
Mercilessly hunting Tony down. Telephoto lenses.
Yeah. You're like one of One Direction, aren't you, Tony? That's how popular you are.
All you got to say is, where's that bloke who needed a wheeze just walked into the sea?
Yes, and that's Tony Esmond.
That was me.
And also joining us this week is a prolific writer whose work credits include the likes of City of Lost Souls, Little Girl Black, Kid Monkey, The Grime, and most recently, The Forest, The Chair, and Those Forsaken There. Yes, this week we're pleased to be joined by James McCulloch. Hello.
Hello. Sorry, I totally fucking interrupted you there.
No,
that's right, man.
Made intro and I'm like, fucking yes! Come on, let's do this one.
Welcome to the show, James.
You're right, James.
Yes, we've been meaning to get James on the show for quite some time, and obviously he's got
ages. We've been saying he's come on for fucking ages.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you know, he's here now. That's all that matters. And this week's going to be a proper fun one because we've been talking for about 20 minutes before we even started recording. So you know, that's always a good sign. Do you know what else is also good, Tony?
Is it Comic House or My Balls? One of the two.
Well, one of them is worth £3 a month.
That one's worth a lot more.
Exactly.
Thank you, Dan.
I was talking about Comic
House. He's talking about Comic House.
£3 a month. That's not bad for my ball.
That's not bad. Yeah.
£1.50 each.
Yeah.
And plus, you're not going to do 2 for £6.
Yeah. And also with his balls, you get a 14-day free trial. But our sponsors,
you do not.
Our sponsors of this lovely show are Comic House, who we got to hang out with last week at the True Believers Comic Festival, which we'll talk a little bit about in a minute.
On the latest update email, we got a photo of me, Vince, and Pete.
I've not seen that. Okay, I'll take that picture.
Check that one.
Oh, that's nice.
Check it out.
Do we all look happy?
Yeah, it's that one where I'm dressed up in the Viper costume.
We're going to talk about that in a second. Right, yeah. But our lovely sponsors of this show, Comic House, we're True Believers. But before that, they've been helping us keep this show on the road every week for you lovely people and keeping it free and keeping the lights on because they're an amazing place with a huge selection of titles on their database and it's all indie comics. They love indie comics and they just want more people to read them, much like us really. So if you self-publish, you can list your book on their website for free and when you sell a copy, they only take a tiny, tiny, tiny commission, which is awesome in the self-publishing world where every penny counts more so than ever, and I think this year will be a big testing ground for every penny counts, I think. When it comes to comic printing, but that'll be something we talk about in a future show, I think. With Comic House, they've got a huge database, and they have a featured section on their site, which they list all the latest titles. Plus, they've got their own app, which we talk about, and we use quite a lot. It's Netflix for comics. You can't say more than that. For only £3 a month, you get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics, which is growing week on week. Dan, what is some of the new stuff on there at the moment?
In this week's update, we've got issue one of Rumble Kings, Dexter's Half Dozen. I think you got a copy of that at Troubs, didn't you?
I did indeed, last week's show.
And we got an interview, didn't we?
Great book. I definitely highly recommend that to people who love indie comics.
Got Parallels of Comic Book Anthology, The Book of Joe, Magnus Robot Fighter, Surrealsville, Mahoney's Hardline Comics. I recommend that. That's a great comic.
That's good. Yeah,
Broken Down, Four Dead Bodies, and then a whole lot more.
Yes,
cool. I have to say, I've been chatting to Pete. I've stuck a couple of people his way who I've suggested need to get on Comic House, and I know he's in talks with a couple of quite exciting creators that we're big fans of. Mm. So watch his space around that. Yeah, really good. Yeah.
So
that fucking job, you, Ian. Fuck's sake. The fuck you take my job? Oh man,
I'll do it for free.
Ah, see, so do I. Wait a minute now.
What's that?
Pounder, they don't. So wait a minute, what's going on?
Look, let's all be friends now. Come on.
I feel like we're in on the balcony in a pub in Train Spotting, and we're about to throw a pint glass over.
Oh God.
No, it's cool. No, because that's the whole thing about comedy, because you try and get as many people involved as possible. Because it was really hard. I know you're going to talk about it later on, and I'm sorry to interrupt the advert and all that kind of thing.
No, first one,
have you heard our adverts? They're an absolute mess. Yeah. This isn't an interruption. This is actually improving the quality.
Yeah.
So when we first got started, it was really weird because obviously me and Pete, we'll talk about it later if you want, but I met Pete at MCM in London one time. And he got the idea of doing this fucking magazine thing, the anthology and that. And see, it was just fucking, we fired all these names out and we kept on asking all these people and loads of people, because no one, no offence, but no one really trusted it because it was an unproven thing.
Yeah.
But it was really good that now a lot of the guys were not sure to begin with, they're actually doing things for Comic House now, and they've got their fucking comics up in the app and they've got fucking all this kind of stuff. And it just shows the trust that Comic House have now.
Yeah.
I said this to Pete at the weekend. I've not heard anyone say a bad thing about it. I've got to tell you.
Yeah.
I think it's a great thing. Yeah.
If you find anyone, tell them, fucking, I'll go around. I'll fuck them up. fuck that. You know what I mean?
In the nation. His team are working bloody hard on that. Speaking like, he's constantly looking ways to innovate it, to make it better, to push it forward. And I think the more we get behind it, the more successful it can be, and our comics in return.
Yeah, and our lovely listeners, most of them are probably already reading Comic House and have a subscription anyway. But if you don't, like I say, there's a 14-day free trial on that for only £3 a month, which is an absolute bargain when you see how many comics there are on there. A lot of the times we recommend books from there as well. So, you know, we stand by it and we love it. And if you want to dive headfirst into the amazing world of small press we talk about every week, then go to comichouse.com and find out more. You can also listen to last week's show where we talked to Pete from Comic House about what they've got in the works. So there you go. Yeah. When we met him at True Believers.
Seems like ages away now, doesn't it? It seems months ago. All the pimping and that we did, and all the little pieces and talking about it, and then it was up and done in like 12 hours, and we're like knackered and driving home, you know.
Yeah, conventions have this thing that no matter what convention it is, where it is in the world, or you know what time of year it is, if it finishes on the Sunday, by the Wednesday it feels like it was months ago. Do you know what I mean? Because you probably had so much fun there, and like you've been chilling out. It feels like you get so much done in a day, and hopefully you've been successful. But even though it's only been a week or so for us, it feels so long ago since we had fun.
It does, I miss you both.
Yeah, oh, we miss you too, Tony. But you've gone off to Spain, so you're all right.
Fuck you. Fuck you all.
he's just trying to get further and further away from us.
Yeah. Do you know what they don't have in? You know what they don't have in Spain? They don't have comic shops either. So
really?
I'm glad that I bought a fucking bootload of comics.
That can't be true.
I've yet to find one.
I know Dragon Ball's massive in Spain.
Is there any good comics that are massive over here then?
Shots fired. Shots fired.
There's got to be Spanish comics.
I'm near Marbella where I'm staying, and there was a comic shop in Marbella that I walked about an hour in the burning hot sun last time I was here to find, only to find it had closed down. Oh, but you don't really see them in newsagents and stuff like that. Not like Italy or France or Belgium or anywhere. Or even Portugal, you see sort of texts and stuff like that in newsagents or the equivalent. You don't really see it as much here. Maybe because I'm in the ill-educated English area where it's full of English people. You know, they don't really understand comics. Yeah.
They don't even know how to fucking read. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Exactly.
That's true. Exactly. But that does bring up a good point. If there's any of our listeners out there, be you Spanish or otherwise, that know of like comic books, shops, etc. in Spain, then get in touch with us and let us know, because we're all about supporting comic book shops, because we need them. We really need them, no matter where they are in the world. So if you want to put us right on that, then maybe write something on Awesome Comics Talk when we post that up on Facebook. If you don't do Facebook, then email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com.
Did I tell you I
such a pro?
I am.
I bought that Kirkman's Reaper from Amazon, And then turned up and it was in fucking Spanish.
Oh,
I sent Vince a birthday book once one year and it was in French, didn't I? Do you remember?
Yeah.
So you just look back at it and it goes, it says in Spanish. Yeah. That's great.
I love manga. My daughters are all about the manga. I don't fucking understand. I think it's a young person thing. But anyway, they fucking love the manga. And she was like, it's Assassination Classroom or some shit. I don't fucking know. And so I ordered that for her birthday. And it turned up. She opened up. She's like, it's in a foreign language. I'm like, it's a fucking manga. And she's like, no. Like it was going to be in fucking Japanese. You know what I mean? But no, it was in Spanish.
I don't understand foreign countries. I put a picture out of that in my toilet here in the hotel room. It's like a toilet, and opposite is a bidet. And sort of sarcastically, I put out on Facebook, "What's this crazy European kinky shit going on? You got two toilets opposite each other." And the amount of people who took it seriously and wrote back to me telling me what a bidet was.
Surely though, it's for if you've had too much on the night before, so you can shit and vomit at the same time.
Yeah.
I always thought a bidet was a Beyonce album. Is that just me?
I had sandy feet earlier, so I washed them in the bidet and put another picture up that said "Fuck you, Europe." I'm sure that somebody.
I tell you what, you're a real class act, Tony. You're a real class act. I've always said
satire, my friend. Satire. You just,
satire.
Nothing wrong with washing your feet in a bidet. I'm on.
Thank you.
Nothing wrong with that.
Anyway, true believers. Back to true believers. So what are we going to talk about?
True believers. We're at a convention. Yeah. We're not going to run off a huge. Last episode, there was lots of interviews there. Thank you for all the nice words about the last episode. And so everyone that we met at True Believers who came, whether it was dropping by the table or who we bumped into when we're walking around, we don't want to miss anyone out. So we're not going
to
give.
And we didn't bother to write it down on the day, so we're not going to name everyone.
But we met some amazing people, discovered some new brilliant books, spent a bit, got some goodies given to us, which was very, very kind. We're very lucky people. I can definitely say that because I came back with quite a lot of amazing stuff.
It
was a thoroughly great day, well run. It was nice to, just the little touches, like when they had the board where people could sign messages about Stan Lee. I thought was quite nice.
That's good.
We've got a nice mug as well, haven't we? Got a True Believers mug.
Great. Yeah.
Have you actually drunk anything out of that, Dan? Have you used that properly yet, Dan?
Hell yeah. Yeah. Of course I have.
Yeah. It sounds really strange, but they make really good cups of tea in those mugs.
Yeah.
I don't know. How is it different to any other mug? But it is, isn't it?
It's it is.
Must be enough space for the tea bag to go round. Yeah. Flavor in the water or some shit.
Undisputed fact that they make great cups of tea.
Scientific fact. We're going to say
it. Even though Tony kind of rumbled my game, I made a costume up for one of the Vipart turned up.
Yeah, I was. I knew there was something going on, and I caught. And we had dinner the night before, and I kept saying to you, "Right, what the fuck have you done? You're doing something." And you wouldn't look me in the eye, and you said, "No, nothing." You look away. And I'm like, "Right." So I knew there was something coming, but I didn't know.
Well, I was saying me and Vince haven't done anything, and that wasn't
a
lie because Vince hasn't done anything.
Yeah, as always, I haven't done anything, and yet I get all the blame. What's that all about?
Go on. Yeah, so you made up a Viper costume, which got a lot of attention, didn't it?
Yeah, I was trying to ask Sarah Harris for some help over Christmas because
right.
It doesn't really come naturally to me doing the cosplay and lock, and she pointed me in the right direction, and I managed to put it all together. And I couldn't wear it for long. It's so hot. It's boiling. That office, that room anyway. But wearing all that get-up and a bike helmet, oh, Jesus. Yeah.
You're just far too manly, Dan. That's what it is. It was animal magnetism. That's
and you had no pants on.
Yeah. That was made it quite uncomfortable, that.
Oh, dear.
It's obviously the Viper hanging out.
Why didn't you call your character Grass Snake? Was that not a...
Perhaps I could have that as a villain in an upcoming issue.
He's a villain because he's got a small knob. There you go. He's upset with the world.
The perfect name for a villain like that is the Chafe. Do you know what I mean? What were we talking about? Oh yeah, True Believers. Yes. Yeah, so thank you to everyone.
It was thoroughly excellent.
Yes, it was brilliant. We thoroughly enjoyed it. Check out last week's show where we talk a bit more about it. And there you go. And now
what's
back.
What's the next
to
thing we got coming up? I can't remember now. Is it Cardiff? Is
Cardiff, thing? Yes, Cardiff in March, isn't it? Yeah,
that's right. You got to send me that image because I don't know how to work the internet.
Oh, yeah, Tony doesn't know how to do technical things, and now we have to give him images to put on websites.
Another thing that sounds wrong.
That's just cruel. Surely it would be easier just for you guys to do it.
Yeah, what? I'm like a slave to them sometimes, dude. It's just it's not fair.
What are you talking?
I'm like the elder statesman of the group. Hey?
Get the fucking picket lines going.
Yeah, exactly.
Digital shit for older people. We don't need to do your shit. Fucking
the Silver Surfers.
Yeah, one out, all out. That's what I say.
Have a wee sit down because you might be tired of it for a bit. You know what I mean?
I like that. Angry. I might have a sit down wee. Just chin myself up.
But all I do is sit down wee. Who the fuck needs this?
Yeah, what's that all about?
Wash your feet off in the beady at the same time.
Because, you know, maybe you go for a wee and a bit of shit comes out. So I'm saying, maybe that happens. Maybe it's a thing. Just saying.
I think technically it's impossible to do a shit and a wee at the same time. But, it maybe will happen. Might happen, mightn't it? Isn't that technically impossible?
Is it technically impossible? Is it?
I don't know. I may have made that science.
I'm going to investigate that after the show.
Shit. We're the fucking science guys.
I will say this. This show has never been more highbrow than it is
exactly
right now.
Scatological, I believe, is the phrase.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking about the age divide. We're talking. I feel more like I'm on Question Time than the Awesome Comics podcast. Oh dear. But anyway, we're here to talk.
I'm here to talk about being old. It's fine.
You're not that old.
That's old. Yeah, I'm 41.
Really?
Fuck you. Fuck you in your face. I'm fucking 50, my friend.
Fucking, oh no, man, that's even older than me. I thought I was. Shit, sorry, man.
That's all right.
Because you go to Comic Cons and it's all these young coming up, eh?
Yes.
Hey, how you doing? This is great. Yeah. And I'm like, fuck you and your fucking cosplay dick. Fuck off.
Yeah, take your free hug, stick him up your ass. That's what I say.
Fucking conga line. What's that all about? He's fucking one of us in that shit. Fuck off.
Really?
I'm really grumpy at conventions. Like, there's conga lines, and one of us, and they go round, and I fucking shout at them and everything. From my table, just start fucking shouting at you.
Episode 188 is the one where I've lost control.
Yeah.
Fuck, let's get James on. That'll be a fucking great idea.
Can we just call this episode Trainspotting 3?
No one's going to fucking understand a word I'm saying anyway. It's fine.
Mate, I'm half sweaty. I know what you're saying. It's right, my friend.
I'm really bad at conventions. Just to completely change subject, and I do apologize. Right, I don't really. No, but like there was these fucking guys, right? Three guys come up to my table and they're chatting to me for a while, right? And they're talking about the comic and they're like, "Hey, right, cool, cool." And I've just had enough because this is how grumpy I am at conventions, right? And I just went, "Are you going to fucking buy it or what?" And they fucking look at me. They look at me and they shat their pants and they just ran away. And I was like, "We fannies." And the guy next to me was like,
"Yeah,
would you just say that?" I'm like, "Fuck them." You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
I could have lost 5 in that time.
Mate, it's fucking £3. Either buy it or fuck off. That's honestly, that's how I feel sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's when they're heeing and hawing. Oh, I don't know.
You could have read it by now, mate. You could have read the whole comic by now.
When they stand there and they read the fucking comic and then they put it down.
Yeah.
Oh, that's that'll fun.
Fuck these guys up. And they're like, you tell them and they go, "That's a really good idea." And they walk away.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. We've all.
Sorry.
We've all been there.
You ever think when people come up and tell you about the idea for a comic? Because Larson tweeted about it the other day. They start people endlessly telling him about their idea for a comic.
Yeah.
And never fucking make it.
I was at an event and I was stuck talking to someone.
Oh, yeah, shit. Was it an hour?
90 minutes.
Was that a BAM?
Hey?
That's when I kept taking pictures of you and sending them to you.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? That's when I was like, fucking. Well, that's the same one where the geezer came up and he picked up every book on the table I was running and said, oh, can you tell me what this is about? And I did about four, and I went, mate, fucking, I don't care.
And you know what, so, see, right, see, see, this is why I created the grind. You know the grind thing, right?
Yeah.
That's why I did the grind. For all these wee pricks that came up, I've got a story for you. Right, cool. And they start to tell you, and I'm like, oh, no, wait. Send me in an email. I do this short story comic called The Grind. That's the only reason that was existing.
Hang on, Vince is in that.
I'm like, I did something in that.
Fucking, I think like fucking one of the guys who phoned up when you want to be in it. But like, yeah. That's because we're like, I'd be putting new people in it. But not as well. How many of these fucking wee guys, right? I'm totally being a dick here, right? I'm sounding nasty. But I am a dick, so I don't care. Right, so they came up. And how many of them? I've got this great story. So John Constantine does this thing, and I'm like, for fuck's sake. What is it, John Constantine, that every prick with a pen thinks they can fucking write a story for him?
Yeah.
And you want to be like, yeah, I'm sure that DC are going to fuck you, John Constantine. You, who's never done anything, and you know, your fucking face to eye ratio is all fucked up. You know what I mean? You're just something. There's something going on there. There's something not quite right. I'm going to give you John Constantine. That's what's going to happen. You know what I mean?
I tell you what, though, I'd like to see you write it, dude. That would be a spicy book.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it needs to be. That's what it needs to be.
Yeah.
None of this Legends of Tomorrow bullshit. It needs to be fucking lively, doesn't it? Yeah.
So how disappointing was that, though? He's coming back to TV. Oh, amazing. Amazing. And Legends of Tomorrow. Oh, fuck off.
It's literally, I mean, I watch that series, but I watch it because it's the worst TV series ever made. That literally is how bad it is.
Oh, man. Even just the wee boy for Doctor Who, I can't remember, he's Arthur Darvill or whatever it is, the Doctor. What is his name? Max? Is it Max Lord he plays or some shit?
No, it's Time Master, isn't it? Rip Hunter.
Max Lord's the bad guy, isn't he?
It's Rip Hunter.
Sometimes. Yeah, Rip Hunter he plays. Yeah.
I tried really hard to like TV shows, comic books, and I don't get very fucking far before I get really angry and annoyed. Because that nearly never happens. You get an angry and annoyed dreamer.
And that geezer from Doctor Who. He actually proves he can't act in that TV series. It's the worst thing. It's like a joke. It's like he's in a pantomime.
They're sticking that in humans on fucking TV, aren't they? On Pick, I think it is.
Isn't it?
Yeah. It looked awful from the advert. I mean, if you can't put together a 30-second trailer. To make
that's
it look
a, that's good. 11 that's 11 hours of my life that I'll never get back. That is,
yeah.
You watched that for 11 hours.
Yeah, I'm a, I know. Yeah.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
I know. Mate, have you not listened to this show? Don't you know everything?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
But finally,
do you need help?
I will say this: that Tony's your will has been chipped away, and you're not willing to try as much now, are you?
I'm not. Do you know what? When people go, "Oh, have you heard this some comic news?" and I'll go, okay, good. What is it about? Is it about the new Green Arrow comic, or is it about? And they go, oh no, you see, Affleck's not Batman anymore. I'm like, that's not fucking comic.
Nah.
That's bullshit.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in this, oh God, I can't believe I'm jumping into the grumpy old men arena. let's do this. No, we live in this sort of era now where comic news is only really widespread when it's about something like controversial, or someone's been upset, or you know, something's kicked off politically, or something like that. I want comic news that is, it's something positive, something that's like.
I want about like new series and new artists and new writers.
Yeah,
this sort of thing, which it used to be, but it's not anymore. It's either, like you say, it's either some shite about that subject we don't talk about. You know, or it's some shite about a movie or a TV series, which, to be fair, I've lost complete fucking interest.
We did used to get events like Superman or Spider-Man getting married, the death of Superman, stuff like that. But now that's kind of, we don't even get that.
Yeah. It even gets to the point of like, when it comes to the real life stuff, you know, sometimes I've seen articles about, just say, you know, hypothetically, there's an old artist who's like, you know, their health really bad and, you know, or something really bad has happened to them, so they've got a GoFundMe to try and help them out. You know, this sort of stuff, something positive. That gets drowned out by all this other negative shit.
It's all bat things, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fucking bat penis and fucking, you know.
Yeah.
And the classic one that's always The worst one, I think, is when, that isn't a bad thing, but when they make like, yeah, Iron Man's now a female and she's black, and the way they report it is completely wrong, and it goes out and you're like, what the fuck he's doing? This could be a positive thing. This could be a good thing, that to try and rejuvenate a character as an old character, but all you're doing is talking about how fucking fanboys are whining.
Yeah, yeah. They always kind of like, this is really going to upset some people. So why have you approached it like that?
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, it's like you've done it as not as a storytelling device to sort of introduce a new character, but just purposely give people the middle finger. And so how do you think
clicks.
That's going to go down? Yeah,
everything is for clicks now, and that's the shame.
But I feel like that's kind of like a one and done kind of thing. Like that rage burns out very quickly, and people move on to other stuff. So to get that initial hit, fine, okay, but then people seem to move on and just, do you know what I mean? I don't think that's a good way to sustain an audience by just getting people to rage click, was what the term is.
Oh, is that you know about these things?
I got my finger on the pulse.
Yeah.
That's someone else.
On your Viper. He's got his finger on his Viper.
Oh,
fucking whole hand, both hands. Fuck sake.
Strangling the bastard.
They're just parasites, these guys, though. You know what I mean? They're just parasites. They just kind of fuel on the worst kind of person, the fuel on the worst kind of comic fan, and they're just kind of spoke, adding fuel to the fire when there's plenty of good fucking comic fans out there.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is they always sort of say it's the vocal minority, because the majority of comic people are amazing. I mean, you know, all the people we've met, we've been lucky enough to meet or interact with all over the world
have been
amazing.
Right, haven't they?
Yeah,
they've been great. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just the minority. That they got a bigger mouth
and some people see that as a shortcut to get their name out there.
Yeah.
Especially in these so-called sort of comic journalists, it's a shortcut to get their name out there to moan about something.
Yeah. Or let's face it, comic professionals. There are some that are very unprofessional when it comes to the way they interact online.
Yeah, some
of them just my heart sad. These days, like some of the shit they come out with, and you're like, "Well, for fuck's sake, man! I've got like 100 comics you've fucking been part of, and you've just
yeah,
that
exactly,
like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah." And they break your heart a little bit, don't they? You think I've spent thousands of pounds on your comics, pal? Like, calm down. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I know what you mean.
I think the most recent example was Chuck Dixon. For me, I don't know if you're allowed to say, are you allowed to say names, but Chuck Dixon when he came in,
doing
our right comic thing. And I love his Nightwing, got me into Nightwing, and it got me into Batman, and I'm a massive fan of Chuck Dixon. The stuff he did, that was like properly like what got me back into superheroes. And I was just fucking like, you fucking prick. You know what I mean? It just...
What did he do?
Pissed me off so much.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he did, actually.
He basically started writing for, you know, the far-right comics, and they were doing these Kickstarters for these far-right comics, and they were getting all this money. He was writing for them.
Oh, okay. He was writing...
Writing for these fucking far right comics and stuff like that. That's fucking. Sorry to ruin everyone's fucking night.
No. I ran it off of a joke. Zoe put on this film last night called Overlord, and it's about like the Nazis engineering zombies.
Yes.
And I said,
I've not seen this. Yeah.
I said this zombies experiment makes the Nazis look really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's doing nothing for their public image.
Yeah,
is it?
God.
Oh, yeah, God. It's not makes, fair. It's
yeah,
not
makes
fair.
Them, makes them look like the bad guys.
Oh dear.
But anyway,
onto comics. Right. Yeah, and let's turn the frowns upside down and talk about some making comics. Because James, you've been pretty prolific. I mean, how many years have you been in the comic scene now?
4.5, coming up for 5 years.
4.5 to 5, and you've put out quite a bit of work.
Yeah.
I mean, how?
So presumably that came from you being a fan and deciding to write. Sounds like you've been a fan for a while. Is that right? Or...
Oh yeah. I mean, I started to try and write comics actually when I was 20, because I love comics.
Right.
Like, I'm a massive fan of comics. I used to the first comics I ever got was on holiday in Haggerston Castle. You know, fucking by Berwick upon Tweed and that.
Right. Okay. Right.
So I got this comic pack, and it was fucking. I mean, before that, it was the Dandy and the Beano, and my brother got 2000 AD, which scared the fucking shit out of me at the time. But I got the comic pack, and it was fucking, it was Blue Devil, right? Blue Beetle, and a fucking Batman one, and Legion of Superheroes or something. And I just fell in love. And ever since then, so it was about 1986 or something.
Yeah.
So ever since then, I've just been fucking just comics. I love comics. They're my fucking, I want the armed world. You know what I mean? I fucking adore comics, and I tried to write some when I was 20, but the problem was I can't draw worth a shit. So, and I didn't know any artists at the time.
Yeah.
Fucking idea how to get involved in it. I mean, you're talking about like fucking what, 21 years ago, so, you know, 1990.
Yeah. There wasn't the social media sort of connections or anything. Nothing like that exists. It was so much harder, wasn't it?
Yeah, small press was a lot smaller back then. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to know someone in your social circle. Otherwise, that, you won't get
That's how I started. I got introduced by a mate to an artist who was a mate of a mate of mine. And he said, oh, he wants to draw a story. Can you write something for him? And then that's Ed, who did our third issue cover. That's how I got into it, just like by a social friend. And then we went for a coffee, and then we did a table at Bristol, and you know, that's how it worked, you know.
You did that first comic, where you tried that. So like, how did you find an artist for it in the end?
So I wrote, it was actually what is now Karen Shade and what became City of Lost Souls that I wrote back then. And so I was doing, like, years passed, and I had kids, and I was in bands, and I played fucking music around the country and that shit, and that was all fun. And but I always had the ideas in my head to do the comics. Mm. And it was when I was doing the live-action vampire role-playing game that we were talking about.
Nothing dodgy, everyone. Anyone presumes that is something dodgy.
I met Janine there. And Janine was an artist who was really good and always wanted to do a comic. And so I spoke to her about possibly doing a comic with me. And it just progressed from there, and that's what became City of Lost Souls issue one. Now, it didn't happen for another like 5 fucking years after that. It wasn't like next day it was fucking there. You know, it was a long process. Because I didn't know there was an indie scene, because I never went to Comic Cons. I never went to Comic Cons because we didn't really have many in Scotland at the time. Yeah, I remember trying to get into MCM in Glasgow. That was the first biggie that I knew of, because I don't even think Edinburgh had one at the time. Because that's only been going a few years.
Yeah.
And I remember queuing it to get in and never got in. I didn't even get in. And the next year I was fucking selling a comic there. So I was like, fucking result, I actually got in, you bastards.
Right.
Fuck you, I found a way in. and it's fucking much more expensive to get a table than it is to buy a ticket, sadly. But yeah, where the fuck was I? Fuck, I've totally lost my story. I started to look into the small press scene because I didn't know much about it. So I started looking at comic printers and stuff, and I bought a few books. So I bought like Bearlands, and I bought Cancer Town, and I bought Moon, which were the 3 books that I kind of got hold of because they seemed to be ones that were, when you looked anywhere for UK small press comics, those were the ones at the time that were kind of like, hey, we're a comic, you should buy me. I'm like, I fucking will. I'll fucking buy you. That sounds like a plan. It's like speaking directly to me. So yeah, and then we just kind of spiraled out of control from there. So yeah, I've always been collecting comics, and I think the saddest times of my life are when I haven't been able to afford comics. And you know, fuck it, I love comics. I keep going. I love comics. I'm drinking a lot, so it's fine. because going back to read the Slaying like 2000 AD and shit. And I think that's one of the coolest things about comics. Like, being in bands for years, right? When you meet bigger bands, they're fucking wankers. There's very few bigger bands that have any fucking time for you and your existence. Fucking Duff McKagan, he just sat in a room by himself. Because he's Duff McKagan, he doesn't need to fucking come out and say hello. He can just fucking sit in his room and do his fucking yoga or whatever he wants to do, you know. but, like, when you meet fucking John Wagner or that, John Wagner's a fucking lovely guy.
Yeah.
And you're like, holy shit. You know, I've been reading you since I was fucking, since I could read.
There's just something.
I think to completely change the subject, there's something really nice about the comic community. Like, there's just something special about it. That
I think a lot of the older ambassadors as well, you can tell the class acts who are the older ambassadors. Some of the young guns can be a little bit off, but they soon learn their ways. They soon learn that that's not the way it's done. And like you say, like people like John Wagner, all these sort of people, you know, they're proper class acts. You know, they'll have a chat with you, and they'll help you as well, I think is the thing. They'll give you advice. Yeah.
I mean, the quote on issue 2 is City of Lost Souls was from Pat Mills.
Not to name drop, but I was out for dinner with him last night. You know, I mean, it's that, that's kind of these, that's that like little tier of guys, you know, the best English creators are just like the nicest people, you know. They don't see it as competition. They want something that's healthy for the whole of the industry, so they want everyone to improve, you know.
Taking it back to Troops, I spoke to Jeff Senior, and he was an absolute dude. like just talking to him, really down to earth, just saying, yeah, this and that. And I gave him a copy of the Vanguard book too, and he looked through it and said, do all this yourself, blah, blah. And he seemed like he was just genuinely having a conversation as opposed to kind of just going through the motions. And it's really nice when you get that.
The moment you bring a comic book out, you see the change. Like, because they get guys, like we get guys coming up, I've got this idea for John Constantine. No, oh, that's great, mate. On you go. Fucking send it in to DC. I'm sure we'll get back to you in a week. It's that fucking amazing. And and you go, but they must get it all the time. But the moment you say, I've got a comic, and here it is, they fucking change. They totally did their spin on it. They're like, all right, cool, what's it about? And they want to know.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're like, wait, what? You know, did I miss a fucking meeting? Because you just asked me what this was about, and you're fucking John Magna. And it's a bit weird. It's just really cool. It's just a really nice fucking thing to be part of, isn't it?
Yeah.
I find it a bit intimidating because I was chatting to, he was telling me about a couple of his new stories, and which I think we might have an interview around next week. But and I was telling him about something I'm working on at the moment. And he was like, sort of picking it apart and saying, oh, yeah, that's good. And what have you thought about this? And I'm like, this is fucking brilliant. And I'm getting story tips from Pat Mills.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, brilliant.
Can't fucking buy that, literally.
Yeah. You can't. Yeah.
You buy Neil Gaiman, though, apparently, according to the
Facebook. Yes, I know. I've been sticking the Gentleman Broncos clip on that every time I see it on Facebook.
Gentleman Broncos. Jesus.
Fucking one of the first comic boxes I ever had was actually it was Sandman, Swamp Thing, Hellblazer, and Shade the Changing Man, and Wildcats and Spawn, bizarrely. So right. I'm a fucking massive fan of Neil Gaiman, but it's just really it's amazing that he's doing it. But it's one of those weird things where you're like, what the fuck are you doing that for? You're Neil Gaiman.
Have you guys seen Gentleman Broncos? Have any of you seen?
Yes.
No.
There's a cat. It's basically a kid at college or high school who writes a sci-fi story, and this character's this novelist turns up, sci-fi novelist, who literally is Neil Gaiman. There's no two ways about it. He's
played by Jermaine from Flight of the Conchords, who's one of my favorite actors.
Who's absolutely brilliant in it. He says, "Oh, he gives a lesson on how to name your character."
Oh, so good.
He says, "What's it? Give me the name of your head pro tag." Yeah, and he goes, Bronco. And he goes, oh, Bronco. Is he a centaur? And he says, no. He says, does he change into equine stature? And he says, no, he's just a geezer. And he went, oh, okay. Change his name to, you can add different things to the end of his name. Have you thought about adding the word anus to the end of his name? And it's like fucking brilliant. It's so Neil Gaiman. Really slowly, like Neil Gaiman does, you know.
Yeah, any name could be turned into a science fiction character if you add the word anus at the end.
Yeah, no, fucking hell. Honestly, it makes me die.
So good.
James Hunt's anus. Just saying.
Oh, no, it was James anus.
Yeah. That's it. I'm never getting fucking back on. Blacklisted, that's it.
Yeah, Black, we're done. He goes, what's the name of your main pro tag? And you're like, it's just like, it's so cringing. It's by the guy who did Napoleon Dynamite. That's right, Vince.
Yeah.
Same director in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a bit of an unknown one, isn't it? I don't think it really did much. People didn't understand it. But
yeah, because it is pretty crazy, like some of the stuff that goes on.
Yeah.
oh, dear. Bronco's a good name for a character, though.
Yeah, I think
so. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's not a centaur.
Yeah, so I mean, I know what you're saying, Jane. As soon as you step into the comics world, it completely changes, doesn't it? Like what you think is going to be a small, very insular bubble just becomes this large community of everyone sort of being supportive and helping everyone out, you know. Mm. And pretty much eventually you find that most of your friends are then made up of all the people that you met at conventions, because everyone's always communicating and in touch with each other, and like, you know.
Yeah.
And
we're all little WhatsApp groups with each other and all this sort of things going on, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm in constant conversation with Steve Horry and Pete, and Dave Cook was at my gig last night, on Friday night. Dave Cook was at my gig and that shit, you know. So it is that.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Brotherly fucking, you know, hey, how you doing? You know.
But I think I said it last week. I said we've got to be in it together, otherwise it's going to fucking fail. Yeah. That's the only thing. You know, it's got to be everyone sort of pushing for each other.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Because it's not a competition either. It's not a fucking competition. And that's when
No, it's not.
Like,
Yeah.
Coming for bands, not wanting to be a prick that talks about being in a band all the time, but coming for bands, everyone's out for themselves. They all fucking, I'm better than them. Why are they getting that? And that's the first thing.
Yeah, they all slag each other off, don't they? Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
And I fucking hate that shit. And that's what's so refreshing about the comic scene is we don't fucking do that. We're like, if somebody gets a good job, you're like, holy fuck, well done, man. That's amazing.
Yeah.
On you go.
Yeah.
Fucking hopefully you'll get something off the back of that.
There's the odd one who goes, there's the odd person who goes, oh, you're working for Image, are you? Could you introduce me to anyone? And you immediately know that they're a bit of a James Hunt, don't you? Do you know what I mean? There's the odd person. But we're never bad to them. We just sort of slowly back away.
Everyone's got such a kind of unique voice and creation in the comic stuff. Like, what works for one wouldn't work for another. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so individualistic that some of the comics are
weird. It's so wide, isn't it?
Yeah, I could never make this, but I make something different.
Yeah.
And everyone does.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I've worked with a few people now, obviously, and I worked with an American publisher and stuff, but that was one of the things that I struggled with, is I never came to anything because they wanted something that wasn't me.
Yeah.
And it's that good thing where it's like, you've got, as you say, you've got your own voice, and so everyone's different. Like, you can watch someone come down the fucking road, not at, like, one where it's a Comic Village, one where there's, like, Funko Pops and shit and all that kind of nonsense, and then you look down, and they might buy a comic down there, and they just walk past your table. And it's nothing bad with your fucking table. It's just because they don't like, you know, that's not what they're into. And there's nothing, you can't feel fucking bad about that shit, because everyone's got different taste. It's not like we're all fucking...
There is an art to not beating yourself up at a comic convention that I think, you know, we all need to get better at some shows. There's always going to be one show a year where you just sort of think, what did I do wrong this year? You know, why was it going? But like you say, it's nothing you've done wrong, unless you're a prick and your table, your table's rubbish. But, you know, the majority are all just, you know, I see table setups that are absolutely fantastic. And so much so that I steal ideas of what to do with my own table. but, you know, I see all these amazing books and, like, art prints and all kinds, and the table's really quiet, you know. I mean, I see it as an opportunity to then go and, like, talk to that artist if I can, if I've got the bottle, if I don't.
It can be tricky, though, because if you said
to a lady,
how did you get on, like, an X show somewhere in the country, and they say, oh, I did good or bad, that can sometimes be no reflection on you, because you'll be having a different product. There's so many variables in it, it's hard to kind of...
Yeah, placement in the hall is a big variable sometimes as well. Who you're next to, what's going on. Yeah, there's a lot of variables, Yeah, there really are. If you've got the energy up that day to just stand up and sell, some people don't, you know, it's all different things, aren't there?
As well, it's a lot to do, I think, with cages as well. Like, you know, some people have cages in front of their table, so people might not see you.
Yeah.
So I don't mean, there's nothing wrong with having a fucking cage in front of your fucking table. If you want to put your artwork on there, that's fine. But it's just sometimes it can affect your sales.
I've said to people, would you mind moving that to the other side of your table? And I've said it twice, and both times they've gone, yeah, no worries. You know, and they understand that they're blocking the view, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it kind of, you're doing something for yourself, but you're also blocking the people off either side of you. And to be fair, it's a kind of personal thing, unless the show says otherwise, saying don't do this or whatever. It'd be great to have something like you could put up behind you, like a shelving, so you could put titles or posters or something there.
But,
obviously, that'd be on the person displaying the table, and you've got to bring all that shit along.
Yeah, the biggest stalls at places like Angoulême and New York and all that, they sometimes have that. There's almost like a bookshelf behind them, isn't it? You know? Which I think is quite an interesting way of doing it, especially if you've got a lot of stock.
Yeah. But to be fair, being small press, you don't often have a lot of space behind your fucking
table. We've got a wheelie bin, and that's it, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Sometimes you have to shove to the wall like an Indian restaurant. It's like...
Yeah, that's a good analogy, man. Exactly.
That's not racist.
Ding.
You know, don't believe that it's racist. It's not.
Yeah, totally. That's what you want. If a white person says it's not racist, it's definitely fucking not.
Definitely not racist.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
But no,
Boston Comics podcast, not a racist podcast. There you go. That's all right. That's worked out fine.
You know, I've got size 15 feet, so like I need a lot of space behind my table, obviously, because I'm a fucking giant.
Fucking hell. My feet are size 13s. I thought I'm a monster, but you're doing me there. 15, wow.
I'm 6'7" ish.
Big lad.
I had a back operation, and then that I might be a little bit shorter now, so I don't know. I'll need to measure myself at some point, but I can't be bothered because, you know, that's time and effort. But yeah, so like, you know, and then you've got your fucking, you're in this tiny wee fucking pokey hole and you've got your fucking banner behind you. And then, but it'd be cool to have some fucking thing up that you could say, oh, look at my hangs. These are my hangs. Yeah. I'm selling my hangs to you. But sometimes the cages can be a bit much.
Yeah.
Like, and when I was in there, but no, I was actually, fuck, no, I did have a point to what I was talking about. What you're fucking saying earlier about, Jesus fucking Christ. Okay, so a lot of the time you'll see the artists and they'll be drawn, and they'll be drawn all fucking day. Like, they'll just be drawn all day. People will come up, I want this sketch, they'll fucking draw it, and they'll fucking, I'm drawing a hang for this boy. And people will come up to look at their stuff, but they don't have time to talk to them because they're too busy fucking drawing.
Yeah.
And it ends up, like, I remember when I was at MCM London, where I met Pete, there was this comic person, and they sold five comics the whole weekend. But it was because they were drawn the full fucking time they were there. They were just drawing fucking things for people. So you need to be able to sell your comic as well as...
I
think you need to think about it. I mean, that's why, like, the Reckless Heroes guys have just got absolutely on point. Because Chris Ember's going to be drawing all day. He is literally going to be drawing all day, pretty much most of the day. But there's a couple of guys at the table, so while he's drawing, there's other people to interact and to bring you in and to, you know. And that's...
And pre-ordering commissions, we said this a few weeks ago, is often good, because they're ready when you get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, because I don't really draw at the table, because, like you say, that I can't multitask for shit. You know, it's bad enough.
Because
we're
mucking about. All we do is muck about. It's the end of the time.
Yeah. We do the interview stuff as well, which is like you have to kind of be on point, ready to grab someone when they've got a free 5 minutes. And
I get halfway through signing a book and someone's talking to me and I've completely forgotten what I've written. You know, because your mind's going in several different directions at once.
I get especially to remember that I needed to write Vince fucks goats.
You did it in pretty much every book, Tony. So
everyone else,
unbelievable. Just you wait, son. Just you wait.
You do get bored sometimes signing shit. So you do stupid shit. I remember Jeanine when we the first. I think it was the second issue. No, it was the first issue. Set Lost Souls and Sin. She started drawing cocks and everything all over the fucking issue. Like in the issue.
She's a keeper.
On the guy's head, and that she'd drawn on, and then a wee smiley face from her, and you're like, "All right, that's cool, man. No bother. That's amazing. Yeah,
that'd be worth a bit."
Yeah. When we're at Sotheby's in 50 years' time.
So, but your books in particular, James. I mean, you like the sort of darker side of comics as well, don't you? A lot of your stuff definitely has got the horror tinge and like dark thrillers and. You know, stuff like, I mean, obviously we mentioned some of your credits. Didn't put on the list one of our faves, which is Transylvanian Nights.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is an absolute banger.
I'm a big fan of Hammer, so that's one of my favourites.
Oh, as am I. So, you know, what inspires you to make comics? Do you think, you know, horror is and stuff like that is your bag, and you don't think there'll be an all-ages comic in the future for you? Or do you think you'd love to do it?
I tried to make an all-ages comic, and that was Kid Monkey, and then fucking about the fifth page, he ripped someone in half, you know, so I fucking went wrong somewhere. My comics are normally fueled by my nightmares, and I have a lot of horrific nightmares, and I have a lot of mental health issues at times as well, and they all fuel my comics quite enough. So even when I start to try and write a nice comic, and I have tried to write a nice comic, it doesn't fucking work. And eventually just bad things happen, and the bad things happen to the characters, and I'm like, well, this has changed. You know, so...
But do you find that's quite therapeutic, though, to then channel, like, these nightmares and stuff into the writing and like, the stories? You know, you find that helps you?
Oh, no, I mean, completely. I mean, if you look at, for example, if you take Little Girl Black as an example, which was a fucker of a book, to get through and to get written, and even to get printed, because I couldn't get it printed for love nor money, because printers just refused to print it, cover artists refused to do cover for it. So when I was doing that book, I was so stressed out with this recurring nightmare, because I've got daughters, and bad things, this guy was doing bad things to my daughters. And it was like a recurring fucking nightmare that I had. And I got alopecia areata, so like I got a big massive bald patch in my head. And I was so worn down that I was covered in warts around my body. I just like totally worn down, and that's why I had to write it. And any time I stopped writing it, that would fucking come back. So, it's like a weird. I would love to.
That's a big broad metaphor for the fact that you need an artistic element to your life. I think pretty much anyone needs it.
Yeah,
you
like
need,
an outlet.
You need you need a creative outlet. I think people who don't have it suffer a little bit from stuff like, you know, mental health issues and stuff like that, because it really benefits me if I'm in a stressful job but I've got an hour out to do some writing or something. It really does help people, I think, you know.
Well, I mean, especially, I mean, because in your day life, you will go through things that no one should have to go through. Like, you know, whether if you're in customer service or whatever, no matter what your job, you will have moments of complete stress and a complete breakdown, and you're like, how the fuck am I going to get through this? And having that escape,
it's
enough sometimes to just get you through to the next day. And that's, a lot of the time, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to get the next day, you're trying to get home, you're trying to get through life. And
yeah.
You know, some people will watch The Voice, or they'll watch The X Factor, or they'll watch Britain's Got Talent, or fucking some pricks in a jungle, and you know, and that you've never seen before, and fuck yeah, and they'll do that, and that's fine. And if that makes what makes them happy, then that's fine. Going out for a drink, you know, at the weekend, that's fine. I'm just not that kind of person, so I need to be creative, and I need to keep being creative, because whenever I stop, that's when bad things happen.
I'm a great believer that elements of your life are creative that people don't always see. So I think, even just a conversation is a creative discipline in many ways. You know, if you're approaching it in the right way, you know, I think having a conversation and exploring ideas and stuff is a creative discipline, you know. I think that's why people chatting down the pub sometimes does work for some people. But, you know, your inner voice sometimes needs to be let out sometimes. And I think that's why writing and drawing helps a lot of people as well, you know.
And plus, there is a high that you get. You get a creative high. Like, you know, if
you really do.
If you've been talking to someone about an idea and all of a sudden things start clicking, or just say you've just listened to an album and all of a sudden you've got a new idea in your head, you get this real, there's a real rush. I mean, I certainly get it, you know, where you just, not necessarily confidence, but you are on like a high of like, yes, I want to make this now. Even if it's just one of those, and we've mentioned them before, you know, a 5-minute idea in your head, you write down in a notebook, you look at it 2 months later and just think, well, that was shit. But at the time, you're thinking, this is great, I want to make this. You know, I've certainly got a lot of stories where I've made notes and, you know, they won't be ready yet. They may not be ready for about 10 years, who knows. But whenever I think about those ideas, it gives me, there's a sort of, there's a rush, there's a boost that you get, isn't there, about like creativity, that, you know, that's one of the things that I love most about comics. And just, you know, even those times where you just sort of think, you do think, oh, what's the point of publishing this, you know who's going to read this, you know, am I shouting into the void? And then an idea
occurs. I don't care though mate, I actually genuinely, I've got to the point in my life where I just do it for myself. Yeah. That's a sort of slightly selfish thing, but I just, you're right, just getting it out there and getting it onto paper.
But
you know,
yeah, that's kind of enough. There's those times, you know, even if I've had those times that are like, oh, you know, this is hard work, something to come along and just got to go, hello, you know, write me instead. And I'll be like, oh yeah, brilliant. And then I'm back in the game again. Do you know what I mean?
Tell you what, I'll read this one off one of the questions on the Twitter so I can put it to you now, because it seems quite an apt point.
Ooh.
Okay.
People from the Comic Art Festival podcast, they've asked, I find I have lots of ideas, but when I sit down and try and script, I struggle to focus. Any tips? So,
okay. For me, are you asking me?
Yeah, go on.
Well,
three of
you.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because I just jumped in like a bastard. Right, okay. What I normally do is I fucking swear a lot, apparently. See, Pete, by the way, Pete's always like, you're swearing a lot in your comics. I'm like, have you met me? So anyway, right. So what I do normally is I've got the idea in my head, and then I write down what I want to happen in the comic, and then I write down the characters, and I research everything. So like, there's one comic I'm writing at the moment that I researched for a year before I even fucking sit down to write it. And you're talking like 1 to 2 hours research to try and make sure, and you've got everything in place. So when you sit down to write it, you know what the characters are, you know who they are, what they're doing, and it just fucking writes itself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's all about, for me, it's all about preparation. I've got an idea. I'll write down the idea and I'll put it to the side. And I'm like, if that's still a good idea in a month, and if it's still in my head in a month, I'll come back to it. And I come back to it and I'm like, right, okay, so I'll do a bit of research and I'll do it a bit more. And then I'll go, right, I'll leave that, and then I'll come back to it in another month and I'll do that. I don't know how to fuck again. Done. But then
I was just
going to say, eventually, when I do sit down to write it, it does just fucking flow. I mean, I just wrote, last week I wrote 3 issues worth, like the first draft anyway, because it's never what ends up in the fucking comic.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah.
3 issues worth of a new comic that I want to do. And it all happened in the space of a week, but it was because of the research and because all the character work's been done already. And I know what's happening in each issue. So it's just a matter of sitting down and writing the fucking thing. Mm. And
now, I'm a great believer in pondering what you're going to write. Think about what you're going to write for a long time. Sometimes even before I put pen to paper, I'm also a great believer in getting a great opening, because I think once you've got a great opening, it flows a bit easier, you know?
Yeah.
My thing about this question about focusing, for me, is I don't write at home. I very rarely, I'll write the final draft up at home, but if I want to go and write, I go to a cafe or a coffee shop and stuff like that, and I'll write there, because I find I've got no distractions.
Yeah.
And I think I really need that. I write early in the morning as well, when the phone ain't likely to go with some work problem. I really like that as well.
What about you, V?
Well, I mean, I'm writing probably more now than I ever have since I started comics, and I've certainly learned an awful lot. And one of my greatest learnings is very much what a lot of you guys are saying, is like, don't run before you can walk. Because there are times when I'm so eager to do it, like a story idea, and I've started a script, and 6 pages in, I've lost my way. This is something that used to happen. I don't do it now, because now I've learned from that. Like, right, before you even start that, let's get the sort of plot pot, you know, just in bullet points, what's happening, you know, and just having that sort of structure. And this even like with prose, I do this with prose as well. I've got like a story I'm working on where I've looked at this A4 sheet where the whole story from beginning to the end is in bullet points, and I'd look at it and I just can't help smiling, because I just think, this is going to work. Now all I have to do is write it. And you know, obviously you'll learn a lot through the writing, and the characters become their own characters and stuff, but certainly when I started the Red Mask, this is the God's honest truth, I didn't think about as much about what was happening as I do now, if that makes sense. I knew the bits that were going to happen in the story and what the end game is. I'm not doing one of those is it something they used to do, Scott Lobdell used to do in the X-Men, where he just write and then whatever happens is going to happen. You know, you start a story, and then it's
Ryan,
like,
though, can't you? Let's face it.
Yeah, so many plot points go unanswered in a lot of these mainstream comics, because they start something and just like, well, that I'll figure that out in the end, you know. And I certainly maybe did that a little bit when it came to the early Red Mask stuff, but then through writing it better for myself, like the first issue was a very simple script. Now I write full script for myself. You know, I mean, when I say full script, we're not talking Alan Moore here. But it's still a massive learning. Like, and everything's a little more structured. I've learned so much about structuring a book in like the years I've been doing it. You know.
Okay. Yeah. I'll tell you where's a good place to go. Pat, bringing up Pat Mills again, he's doing a storyteller sort of blog. If you go to him on any of the social medias, it'll link to it. And it's all about story points and how to develop character. And just reading that is really inspirational about how he gets his ideas and how he suggests you can, what you should do with them and where you should work them and stuff. He's just done one on editing, which is really useful as well. But he did one on developing the idea of Torquemada as well. Which is a really interesting one. It came out last week. Well worth a look. And that'll definitely break any sort.
Sorry, I was just going to say, because that's the best nemesis, is that Torquemada, by the end, he's the good guy. Pretty much. He's not the bad guy anymore. Nemesis is more the fucking, you know...
They sort of flips between the two, does it? Yeah, it flips the two. Like, they're both of them are like shits to kind of... for me, at least, they're both from the shit. It's like one of them wants to do one to the other, one wants to do it back, and they're constantly back and forward in this struggle, fucking people over to get at each other. And I can't remember the end. Does it swing more that way then?
I can't remember. It's a while since I read the end, but
yeah, I think so. I can't remember. I'd probably be fucking wrong, and someone will be fucking more than happy to put in the comments.
James, you know the 2008 people are like, they're a bit crazy, mate. They'll bomb your house. They'll shit through your letterbox. You know what I mean?
That's if you're fucking lucky, they'll shit through your letterbox.
Yeah. Because they'll find out. Set of flame.
They have the skills. They have the skills and the knowledge to find you. They're fucking down to the fucking 2008
people. Don't fuck with that crowd. Yeah.
Back to like writing, though. Like, like, obviously there's the structure of the story, but how do you guys sort of work on characters? Just say you've got a cast of, you know, so, I mean, in your case, Dan, there's Vanguard is an ensemble book, you know, you've got lots of characters. Before you even started anything, do you write, like, bios for all these characters? You know, do you take time to, you know, have a little sort of, some people create Bibles, you know, for the world.
No, I do.
I've kind of got my head, but I kind of know each character's sort of arc or where they're going to end up does work with the story. And so as the story moves forward, they're all getting pulled along with it and they all change accordingly.
Yeah.
There's no one in there that won't be affected as it moves forward. And they all have their little bits to go to. Maybe I should write more character sort of Bibles like Tony suggests. So you kind of got
it's different for me though, because I'm writing it for an artist. So I get it all. The first script will always go off with, it's kind of like a little bit of my approach, first couple of paragraphs, what I intend to do, and then a little bit of the main characters often, you know. Yeah. If it's a bigger cast, it'll be, you know, all the different characters and what I think they'll be like.
Because I find that quite interesting sometimes, because obviously when we think of these stories, the main protagonist or the main villain, you know, and maybe one supporting character, always, like, they're at the foremost, aren't they? You know, they're at the front, so you can write loads about them. The interesting bit is when you're working down the list and looking at the supporting characters, the people that aren't in it so much, but how much do you want to develop these characters? You know,
by the time you get to that part of it, you know, 40 pages in, you might be developing them a bit more. Sometimes it's hard to know, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I created a character for the first issue of The Red Mask, who basically, he wasn't going to be there long, but even though he was a shitbag, he endeared himself to me. Writing him was fun, if that made sense. And, you know, when I started it, he didn't exist. I had the team and I had everyone else, but then it was almost like a fix. It was something that was needed for the story that he dropped in. But as soon as a character sort of enters your story, none of them are ever throwaway, are they? They become, I don't know about you, but the characters become something, and you end up, sometimes even if you're going to kill them off, you become a fan of these characters, you know.
I mean, like, even Adric was all right by then, you know what I mean?
I was well pleased when that little badge floated across the screen at the end of Earth. End of Earth Shock, my friend.
It's only good in Earth Shock. It's the only thing he was good in.
Yeah.
Fucking, like, for me, I write fucking a massive... Each character has, like, 4 or 5 pictures of a person that I think, this is who I think it is, and I have a good couple of pages, even if they're in the comic for, like, 2 minutes, and I fucking hate it when I do all this background, and then they die, and I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, what the fuck was I doing there? Like, wasted my time doing all this stuff. Because, like, for example, when I was doing City of Lost Souls, every single character, all the 12 victims had their own massive background and what happened to them and how they died and all this kind of stuff. And if you've read City of Lost Souls, for all those poor, unfortunate people that have, not all the characters in it a lot, but they've all got their own voice, and hopefully it shows that they've all got their own voice and they've all got their own fucking wee thing so you can recognise their individual characters, not just some generic fucking thing. Like, when you watch a lot of TV, some of the characters are interplaceable. You know, you can just fucking... anyone.
Yeah.
Like, fucking anyone. It's just a stereotype they've thrown in, or that's the same character they had in the last episode written by the same guy because he's clearly not fucking thought about a new character. Mm. And that's what they want you to do. That's fucking fine.
And you do see it in indie books as well. Sometimes, like, I find it more with some of the superhero indie stuff. When I'm reading a book and, the art isn't really doing much, but the character is essentially someone's just writing Superman and Lois Lane, but they just changed the names. And
Batman's another one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so boring. Yeah, it loses me within the first 6 pages, usually, those sort of books.
You notice that's really, like, prolific in America. Like, American small press seems to be a lot, no offense to American small press people out there listening to the podcast, but a lot of it is just, I want to write Batman, but I can't write Batman because Batman's Batman already. So I'm just going to write Batman, but just change it so it's like fucking... I was going to say Catman, but I fucking love Catman because Secret Six was the shit.
Yeah, that's a great series. Yeah, that is a good series.
Yeah.
But I think it's generational as well, I think. You see, like, you can tell the generation who liked, I don't know, fucking Youngblood or Spawn, and you can see the generation who liked the next thing, you know. And, the Jessica Jones, there's a Jessica Jones character that seems to be coming out, you know.
Yeah. We're getting a lot of 90s stuff at the moment, like, in the Americas. Lots of small press 90s stuff.
But all of these brilliant artists and writers, that end up on like these big Marvel titles or DC titles. You know, Scott Snyder, he wasn't writing Batman light books, and then they gave him Batman. He wrote great original books, and then they thought he'd write a good Batman. He would, you know. That's
was it Sheriff of Babylon, wasn't it? Was it Sheriff of Babylon? No, that was
Tom King. Yeah, Tom King.
Tom King. That was it. Sorry, yeah. I'm just looking at my shelf to see what it is. Hey, Tom King.
Yeah, and like, yeah, he wasn't going out of his way to sort of say, hire me for Batman. They picked them because they can craft a story.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what they're going to look for, and that's what's interesting. I mean,
yeah, I don't think has there ever been anyone who's gotten the big gig job because they've done an indie book that's essentially a diet version of the character that they want to do? Surely not. No, I don't think anyone.
Not that I can recall.
Yeah,
I'd really fucking hope not. That would be fucking disappointing. that would be like one of those things where, like, oh, I can die now. That's fine. You know,
we had another question on the Twitter from Fran Qureshi, and it's an interesting one because it might be more relevant to people who've kind of been made a comic. But he said, would we have to talk about the process of rewriting during the actual production phase of a comic? So, like, if you were between writing and the art getting made, and you've had to change it up because the story takes on a different meaning when the panels start getting drawn. Have you ever had that situation? And how did you tackle it?
Yes. Okay, so, like, The Forest, the Chair, and Those Forsaken There. I wrote
brilliant
that.
Title, by the way, mate. I love that fucking title. Yeah.
I don't know if you've read it, because I know I sent it to you earlier, but I don't know if you read it. But I wrote that when I was having a mental breakdown. Okay. And that's one of the things it's about. It's about having a mental breakdown and about feeling trapped within yourself and all that kind of shit, right?
Hmm.
I thought, all that kind of shit. Okay, so anyway, when I got it back from Dan, who's a fucking amazing artist, he did everything.
Yeah, Dan's a beast. We love Dan. Yeah, he's a good lad. Yeah.
Honestly, the guy that the fucking work he does is incredible. And because he's even designed my band's t-shirt and everything, you know what I mean?
Nice. Cool. Man. Yeah.
And so I got it back and I was like, man, what I've written isn't as good as what he's drawn.
Okay.
So, all right.
Not only did I rewrite what the comic was, I've fucking moved shit about and everything. I'm like, right, I'm going to move that scene to there. And I move that scene to there, and I've got in touch with Dan. I was like, Dan, I need two fucking extra pages because I've rewritten the whole fucking book.
All right.
Basically, what you have done far superior. Because I mean, like, me and Dan have been like, I sent Dan the script for this like 4 years ago or something. Mm. It was a long time ago that I sent him the script, and he took his time. You can fucking tell when you're looking at the book. It's just a fucking work of art. And I just felt embarrassed that my words weren't good enough. So I changed what I wrote, and I went, so there might be some panels where you're like, that's weird, because that doesn't really correlate to the picture, and that's my fault if you're ever reading the book. If you're ever unfortunate enough to pick up one of my books and you read it. Because, some people, they read my books and they come up to me and they're not happy they've read my books.
Really?
Oh, fuck yeah. Especially Little Girl. No, actually, Little Girl Black's one of the few books that people actually fucking adore, which is really weird because it's the one I get really nervous about selling. With that one, I just thought that it deserved better than what I wrote, so I rewrote bits, basically.
That's interesting. I think we're all backers of that book, I actually couldn't I've got to be honest with you, dude, I couldn't download it because I'm in Spain. It wouldn't download for some reason. But I'm a big fan of Dan's work, and I'm a pal of Dan's, I really can't wait to see what you both.
Well, I've had a look through it, and it is that. I mean, it's definitely a dark book, and I know you've got some back matter sort of describing more about, like, you know, what was going on at the time when you were doing it. But for me, it's also there's a poetry to the sort of to the story itself, and there's a definite marriage between like Dan Charnley's work and your words. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I mean, we say we love Dan's work, but he's brilliant at doing nightmares. Charnley. Yeah. And you need to follow him on Instagram, people, because he does
some great sort of live drawing, doesn't he? Stuff. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
At Dan's Monsters, that's what it is. Yes. I fucking remember it. Fucking check out this guy's website.
Yeah. I mean, and he's also an amazing laugh because he's been a past guest on the show. But but it is that great sort of marriage of, art and writing, because I really did, it takes you to a dark place. But also you get lost in like how beautiful the book is, and where it goes. How long? I mean, obviously it was like 4 years. So when that process of rewriting it, was that like, you know, how he had it for 4 years and then he was working on it. How, what was the time of the rewrite? You know, was a deadline already in sight and you were like, oh God, I need to rewrite that? Or did you have time to develop and, you know, mature it?
So I don't actually have time limits for any of my books. I just don't see the point. I'm like, you know, if a book takes a year, it takes a year. I'd like to, there's certain times where I'm like, I want a new book at a convention if it's a big convention. That's about as much as I want. I don't care which fucking book it is. I write fucking loads of them. It's fine. I'll get one. It's all right. If one doesn't appear, I'm sure one will appear at some point. But so there was no timeline. So I basically just sat down and I sent it to Medder and I literally sent it to Medder and I went, right, I've got these amazing fucking images and this is what I've written. And I think what I've written is a fucking mess. I was like, I need help. And he was basically turned around and he went, no, what you've got is fine, but you just need to move things around. And we moved things around and then I went, and then as soon as you moved, there was one scene in particular, which I can't fucking talk about because people haven't read it yet. Because no one's fucking read it. Because you three guys are the only fucking... So I've got it.
You've got it.
And Tony's not even fucking got it. As soon as I moved once, there was one scene in particular that I moved to a different location in the book. And the whole book made sense suddenly. It suddenly made complete and total sense. And I went and I phoned up. I sent him a message on Twitter saying, Dan, I need two fucking pages. I need this page and this page for the very end because I've rewritten the book and it works so much better now. And that's the weird thing about, like, when you're writing, you shouldn't be too locked in to what you're trying to do. Like, because when you write comics, it's all scenes. You've got, like, three or four scenes in each comic and you shouldn't be limited to where you put those scenes.
I completely agree, man. I think we're in a medium that there shouldn't be fucking too many rules. We should be experimenting. We should be playing about with stuff. And it's a collaboration. And if the art comes in and you need to do something, then do it, for fuck's sake. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the way it should be. Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, sometimes an artist will give you something that you've written. Like, you've written it. And you're like, right, cool. That's what I want the image to look like. And they send you something. You're like, oh, fuck, man, that's amazing. That's better than anything that I even pictured in my head. And so suddenly the words don't quite, you know, they'll give you a rush of energy that you suddenly feel the need to fucking write the word. This is only good for Tony because he's fucking writing. You guys all fucking do your own art and that.
Do the buzz, yeah.
Fucking. So Tony's like, yeah, I know what you mean. And you guys are like, I draw my own shit. I don't.
That is the best feeling in the world when a page comes through and it's better than you imagined it was going to be.
Fucking. There is no better feeling in the fucking world than that. Like, see Johnny, the stuff on Transylvanian Nights was fucking ridiculous.
Oh, and there was so good.
I love that book.
When there was times where he's like, oh man, I fucking hate that page. I'm like, are you fucking shitting me? I was like, it's exactly how I saw it in my head, or it's even better than I saw it in my head. And
Those pages had a lot of work on them as well, didn't they? He put a lot of effort into it. You can just tell.
Johnny seems to put in a ton of work on his pages. Like, there's so much detailing on it.
Yeah, definitely. Lovely stuff.
Like, see, the scene in the castle. You know, like the scene when he's riding up to the castle and he goes into the castle at the very start and there's all the fucking, it's just fucking beautiful. And he walks into the fucking bedroom and there's the flashback scene of the bat type creature and stuff like that. It's just fucking beautiful. And there is just something really special about being a writer, writing something. Because, I mean, you might write. So Johnny turns to fucking Dave and says, how are you doing? And that's all you've written. You know what I mean? And you can send it away and this artist sends back this thing and you're like, holy fucking shit, how the fuck did you get that for that, you know? But to be fair though, when I write Transylvanian Nights, I write ridiculous fucking exposition about what fucking, you know, like this is what the page, like I'll set the scene. Normally when I write a comic, I'll set the scene, so like, this is the scene of the comic, this is what it all looks like, and this is that shit, and then I'll go into the pages, because it works better for me because I can visualize it better.
So I change my style per artist sometimes. I'm doing something at the moment for a new book, and it's going to be a series of one-page splashes, at least to start with. So I'm actually drawing it. I'm actually thumbnailing it as part of the writing process, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
I just thought that was just a different approach and something that's going to explain it a bit better, because it's like page one, right? It's a picture of a spaceship. You know, it's like that. I didn't really want to do that. I wanted something a bit more, you know. There you go.
So you've got issue two of Transylvanian Nights hopefully launching this year on Kickstarter. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, fuck yeah.
Oh, cool.
So I'm so excited about this one because I wrote, like, So Johnny, in the first issue, complained that there was too many horses. So I wrote a fuckload of horses in issue two. It's like, as soon as he complains about something, I'm like, right, we'll fucking have more of it. And but you know, Transylvania Nights 2, I'm really excited about it. It's fucking, we're kind of expanding on certain characters as the issues progress that are not big characters. And the, because, I mean, the first issue is a total cock fest, you know what I mean? And there are female characters that are big characters in it, you know? So they appear more in like issue 2 and issue 3. They become more characters within themselves. Like there's the knife thrower, and there's the lassie with like the Chelsea smile in the circus.
Yeah. Chelsea Smiles. I remember hearing about them at school. Yeah.
No, yeah. Fucking, oh my God, somebody's going to give me a Chelsea Smile. No, they're no.
Yeah.
You're talking about your dad. But yeah. So there's lots of stuff where it's like, you know, I'm just really excited for Transylvania Nights 2 because I'm really happy with the issue and the way it's turned out. And Johnny's really excited. And when Johnny gets excited, you know it's fucking good. You know what I mean? Because he's not going to give you some shit and like, oh, yeah, it's great. Because, you know, some artists, it's like a paid gig, and you feel like it's a paid gig, for, you know, and then some artists kind of get excited about the project, and they get really fucking into it. And that's the artist I like to work. So, like, each story I write, I normally have an artist in mind for that story when I'm writing it.
Okay,
I never, there's very rarely when I write a story and then look for an artist. I normally have the artist in my head before I've even written the fucking story. And if they don't want to do it, that's fine, you know, fuck them.
But that's, to me, that's where the rewriting comes. I know this is around a question about rewriting stuff, but the rewrite comes more often than not with me is the interaction and the back and forth with the artist during the process. So they might say, can we spread this into an extra page, or, you know, that happened to me a couple of weeks ago, and I'm, oh, fucking hell, that sounds a great idea, yeah, let's do that, you know. And I think that's kind of where sometimes the rewrite happens, and you have to add dialogue or take dialogue away, you know, and stuff like that. And I think that's a good process.
Yeah. I think sometimes as a writer as well, it's really easy to overwrite something.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, it's really easy to put far too much fucking in, and you're like, and you get this, because I try and limit myself to 30 words a page, 30 words a panel, sorry. That's normally in my head, I'm like, 30 words a panel, that's it. And sometimes that's not fucking enough. You need to write more. And then the artist is like, that's too much. It's too much. I'm going to spread it over. And it works really well sometimes. So, but yeah, it is. Because that's what I love about working with artists. Dan and Vince, you're fucked, sorry. No, that's not true, because you guys have worked with writers. I know you've worked with writers, because you've worked with writers for Comic House.
Yeah.
And there's that weird kind of symbiotic kind of relationship that you have with your writer or artist, where, you know, it's a very much a collaboration. And you always feel really bad when you're talking about that, because you will have gigs as a writer or an artist where it's just a paid gig, and you turn up and you do what you need to do, and you fucking go home, and you're like, that wasn't an enjoyable experience. And you want every comic you do to be an enjoyable experience, because basically right now we are living the dream of making comics, and it's the dream we've had our whole fucking life.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it's easy to take it for granted that this is a thing you've wanted to do your whole life.
Yeah, you should be excited about each and every project. Shouldn't you? If you're not excited by it, you're in the wrong game, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh,
cool.
Bloody hell, brilliant. So, obviously, we could be here all night. But where can people obviously find you online to find out more about your comics? Because I know this could be another prolific year for you, obviously, when the new book comes out. The Forester Chair and Those Forsaken There. You know, obviously, that's going to be turning up in a lot of people's inboxes and mailboxes and stuff like that. And they're going to be very, very pleased by what it is. Trust me, folks, it's brilliant. You need to check it out. But if people want to check out the other books, where can people find you?
Comic House app. Every single thing I do is on the Comic House app. And I know
you've got a lot there, man, haven't you? You got a lot of books from there.
Yeah. I mean, Comic House are my publisher. I mean, I work with Pete, you know. All right, guys, how you doing? You know, Pete. and he is, I'm really fortunate enough to have met, because I met Pete at MCM in London. And basically, I was bored out of my fucking mind, because it was too busy to leave my table to meet to see the people that I knew, because I didn't know many people at the time.
Yeah.
And I was stuck behind my table. So if somebody walked by and they were dumb enough to fucking stop and talk to me, I talked to them like, fuck. They did not get away from my table. Pete was unfortunate enough to be at my table for like a fucking hour. And then we started to chat afterwards. But he's just fucking great to work with. It's great to have a publisher that's like, even like Little Girl Black, when that was coming out and I was having loads of troubles, it was him that kind of was like, kind of when you were starting to feel a bit down, he was like egging me on, going like, you know, you can fucking do it, you know, we'll find someone else, we'll do this, we'll do that.
Yeah.
And so yeah, every fucking thing I do is on the Comic House app. Every fucking book, even books that aren't in print anymore, are on.
But that's the ideal place for the Comic House app. If you've got books that you can't, put them all on there. But if you've got a book that you haven't actually got any physical copies of them, why aren't you putting it on the Comic House app? Because you're going to make revenue out of it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny because like obviously City of Lost Souls is that's always been my main title, and issue 6 came out in fucking December, and it kind of fucking, no one really spoke about it, and that's fine. Right. That's all right. It's fine. But is it just because at the time of year it came out, and people like will find it this year, and they'll find The Forest Eternal's Forsaken this year. But I've got like 4 other titles coming out this year, but they'll all be on Comic House eventually. You know,
yeah.
It's just one of those things because Comic House is a great fucking thing. All my books are for sale in the Comic House. If you go on the app and the website, they're all there. You know what I mean? It's just much easier to have that there. It's a great thing for us as creators to have a fucking thing like that where we can fucking put things up.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. Mate, it's ideal. If we'd have had this in the 90s when I started doing this, if we'd have had this in the 90s when I started doing this, everyone would be going fucking mental.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go.
Comicsology is all good and well on that, but fuck me, man.
Yeah.
Try to get on that. Yeah. Hate it. Fucking arse.
For just a second there, I thought you were talking about Scientology. I didn't catch the start of Comicsology. What's he doing trying to go? They sell comics at the Scientology meetings. I'm joining.
Yeah. Now. Oh, God. That's the only way.
That's how Tom Cruise gets a fucking movie made. You know what I mean? I was that a comic? Was that a Scientology?
I got this small press comic. Yeah.
It needs a 6'7" guy. I'm sure Tom Cruise will fit the fucking role. It's fine.
Yeah. He's done it before, my friend. Yeah.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Right, from Scientology to shout-outs. Do we have any shout-outs this week, gents? Tony, you got a couple.
Yeah,
I got
a couple. Yeah, Reality Paper, which is the new Kickstarter from the mighty Stuart McCune, who I might have hinted at talking about earlier. I subscribe to his Drip, which is kind of the Patreon for Kickstarter, if anyone's into it. And it's well worth subscribing to his Drip on there. But he's got Reality Paper is something he's been putting out on there. But you can back it and get physical copies. And I backed it. And I've seen them because I've seen them piled up in his house. And they look amazing. Really good. Congrats to Sliced Volume 3 and Collected Gallant and Amos getting through being funded. They're both really worthy books, you know, brilliant books.
Yeah, yeah.
Good. And thanks to Pat and Lisa Mills, who are looking after me while I'm on holiday. And I've got a Nemesis statue sitting in front of me, which Pat gave me last night, which is just fucking brilliant. Nice. He also very kindly had some pictures taken of himself with our books, which is really nice. Yeah, which I put out on Facebook and Twitter yesterday.
Shameless promotion. Love it.
Shameless promotion, yeah, yeah. And finally, a little thanks to Daryl Thorpe. He knows why. He did me a little favour this week, and he's a trooper, Daryl, and a great talent and a gent. Yeah. Go to Thorpe, Thorpe.co.uk and buy some of his books because they're all fucking ace.
Yes.
And they're really good.
Yeah, I put myself Errol versus Evil.
Oh, it is great, mate. I love that book. Yeah.
I've yet to read it. I've got a massive pile of books I'm trying to get through.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's really in good.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, can't recommend them enough. Also, at Comics Carnival, you need to follow them because that will be the next show we're going to be at.
Yeah, we're at, yeah.
Which is Cardiff Comics Carnival, which is going to be a small press comic, zines and illustration fair. Sunday, March the 24th, 11 a.m. till 5 p.m. at 10 Feet Tall, Church Street, Cardiff, CF10 1BG. Free entry, so it's free to come and throw abuse at us. But, you know, there's going to be loads of... I mean, the Cardiff comic scene is great anyway. You know, so many great creators there. So we'll be basically just ruining the day for everyone, won't we, Tony?
As always, my friend.
Always. Yes, and obviously, another one we're probably going to be talking about soon is at Dunfermline Comic Con, which, James, you're going to be at, aren't you?
I'm a fucking guest. Holy shit. Motherfucker, what's good as shit? I fucking love Dunfermline Comic Con. Is like... it's just all about comics, and the fucking guest list is incredible, and I'm on it. And I'm not saying that because I'm on it. It's actually incredible, and then there's a shitty bit with the local guys, and I'm one of the local guys.
Nick's at that one. Nick Prolix is going to that one.
Yeah,
that's going to be... Say hello to him from me, yeah.
Yeah, when's that one taking place, James?
It's the end of March. Last weekend, I think it's the last Saturday in March, but it's the closest you're going to get to a Thought Bubble-style event in Scotland. I mean, Glasgow Comic Con worked really hard to get comics as well, but between that and there's no fucking you know, Dunfermline Comic Con, it's not got like fucking, I was in fucking Thor Ragnarok in the background for 2 seconds. There's none of that shit. It's all fucking proper good. Comic games. Really brilliant. Fucking good. So,
brilliant.
Brilliant. That's fun.
So, yeah, look for all those links in the show notes this week. But it's time to recommend some comics. Yes. Who wants to go first this week?
Guest first?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
James, what would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners this week?
What, me? Oh, yeah, fucker, right, okay. So, Merrick Sensation Elephant Man, right, that number fucking, what was it, number fucking 8 or 7? Was it 7?
Yeah, I need to catch up on that, because I love that series, and all of a sudden they've been churning out issues, and I need to get hold of the latest issues.
Well, okay. Yeah.
Man, number 7 came through the post this week, and that is the shit. Fucking yeah. Tom, and I don't know how he fucking does it. I mean, I know I've done the grind with him, but I've done the grind with him because he's a fucking legend. And I do a really shit Tom impression, but I'm not going to. But fucking American Association of Health, man, is fucking incredible. NPCT, I'll always recommend anything that Sarah Millman does because she's one of the loveliest people on the fucking planet.
Yeah.
But yeah, that, and I was just this week, I was reading Exit Stage Left, the Snagglepuss book.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Any good?
Fuck me. By the
I've
way.
Heard it's good. Yeah, I've heard it's really good.
Fucking
yeah.
book. Jesus, fuck. And
there's honest... a pull quote.
Yeah. Jesus, fuck. They love that as a pull quote in the States. They'll go right down for that one.
Right. See the middle bit of the States? They'll fucking love that shit. Yeah. They'll all about that. But yeah, no, that's what I've been reading this week. I read the Immortal Hulk. Big Man.
Okay.
And I read that.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good stuff about that. Yeah. Yeah.
The first graphic novel, I read that because I got it on the Comixology sale, because that's the only time anyone fucking buys anything on Comixology.
you and me both.
If you're buying out with the sale, then what the fuck are you doing with your life that you've got that much money? You know, buy the fucking...
Yeah. I must say, I the book I'm going to talk about this week was from Comixology, and I suddenly sort of discovered that I'm not buying I don't buy any sort of big two books on Comixology, like, on a weekly basis. I look at the new releases, and then I normally, a couple of rows down, there is the new indie releases, and I always click on that, and there's always a couple there that I'll pick up every week if I can. And there's some amazing stuff on there, you know.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, and I've read it as well. It makes fucking brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. So, blimey, that's quite a few. Exit Stage Left, yeah. What's that about?
So, basically, Exit Stage Left is about Snagglepuss.
Yeah.
But Snagglepuss and the, you know, in America in the 50s when they were doing the whole thing of the communism thing and, you know, the whole... He's basically a playwright during this period of time. And he's been accused of being a communist. And it's all about him being a gay playwright in a time when being gay was, you know, illegal. And it's all about them trying to hound him down to being a communist. Oh, and wow. You know, and it's fucking, honestly, it blew my mind. Huckleberry Hound's in it and Quick Draw McGraw and all that kind of stuff. And it's
just... There's a couple of them. I'm not a great believer in the crossover thing like that. But there's a couple I've heard that's great. And I read the Hong Kong Fui Black Lightning comic. And that's fucking amazing. And the Batman, who's the one who hunts wabbits?
Elmer Fudd.
See, Elmer Fudd, really good as well.
When I hear it on paper, I just think I'm not interested.
But I agree with you completely around those ones. And then I read them and I thought, oh, this is fucking amazing. Dennis Cowan draws the Black Lightning one. It's amazing. Yeah.
See the Flintstones book as well. They've done the Flintstones book. It's the same guy that wrote the Snagglepuss book. And that's,
yeah, I've heard that's good. Yeah. Yeah.
It's the proper social comic. It's one of those things that you buy on a whim because it's cheap, because it's on sale, and you're like, oh, that was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do myself now, because you expect it just to be a bit of like reading, and next thing you know you're fucking 6 issues in and you're like, holy fuck, this is incredible. And not that you, because, you know, sometimes you want a comic, you don't always want a comic that's fucking like, you know, deep and meaningful. Sometimes you want a comic that's fucking like, you know,
exactly,
a fluff or just a good laugh to
like the Adventure comic, because sometimes that's all I want. Yeah, exactly.
And then you find something that just actually speaks to you and it actually does something to you, and that's why comics are such a beautiful medium, I suppose, that you can have that kind of emotion attached to just reading a fucking comic.
Completely agree.
Dan, do you want to go next?
Yeah, mine was Plan A and Plan B from John Tucker,
who
I had the pleasure of meeting at Troops, where it launched. It's fantastic. I mean, talking to John, he's such a laugh. He really is.
He is, couldn't he? Yeah.
He's a bit of a maverick. So I got one myself a death roulette card and one for my wife, where you spin the wheel and you get your kind of death selected, and he draws you getting done over in the number that you've drawn, which is fantastic. Such a great idea. But yeah, plan A, plan B. Read the blurb off the website. Plan A is the story of escaped convicts on the hunt for a priceless ruby. Plan B, the story of two brothers trying to do the right by their recently deceased father. It's one book. You flip it over. That's plan A. You flip it back and it's plan B.
And that's fucking cool.
Yeah. So that they're like two stories that meet in the middle.
Yeah, there's a little meeting of them, isn't there? Yeah. I don't think we can say because that'll
you
spoil
can't. It,
it
totally spoils
but, yeah.
it. But yeah. Each one's got like a set of characters trying to do something, and then in the middle spread, it's the culmination of what's going on, and it's great. It's really nice.
I mean, I'll say that. I mean, obviously, we love John's work and he's hilarious and stuff. But I think what I like about like him, he's pushing like storytelling sort of boundaries to do something like that. You know, as soon as I hear like two stories that meet in the middle, I'm just like, that's amazing. Do you know what I mean? That's genius.
One thing with this, I read plan A first and then read plan B, but you might get something different out of it if you read it the other way around.
Yeah, he sent me a review copy and I reviewed it for the site. And if, when you open the digital copy, because this is not a physical thing you can flip over, it opens on plan B. That's the first one you'll give them. Yeah, interestingly, which is typical John just playing with you, isn't it?
You know what I mean? You can only have that experience once.
Yeah.
I mean, what side you choose, and you'll get a different story out of it, depending on what you read. You can never go back and experience it fresh because you know the other side of it. And I picked up another couple of these books, and they were great, really good.
Cool.
Dark as fuck.
Yeah.
Which is
And like he's very prolific, so no doubt we'll be talking about more of his books later on this year. I can already predict that.
He did come over to the table and start swearing about people on Twitter. I think he checked on a couple of times, and I was like, yeah, man.
And just a little shout out, his art versus artist is the best one you will see.
It's the only good one. It's the only one worth looking at, to be fair.
Yeah.
Don't stare at it too long, though.
Yeah, no, you go blind.
Yeah.
Tony, do you want to go next?
Okay, mate, I can go. Yeah, so mine is The Art of Dying, which was sent to me by Arena from Europe Comics. It's written by Raoul, art by Philippe Berthet. So it's a one and done noir crime drama, which Bond Destiné does so well. Philip Martin is a Parisian cop who is called to Spain to investigate the suicide. I read this because I'm in Spain. That's the only reason I read it at first. She sent us a pile of books, but I thought I'd give this one a go. He's called to Spain to investigate the suicide of a girl who may or may not be his daughter. It opens with the line of dialogue, "I've always had a love-hate relationship with Barcelona. Today, hate is taking the lead." And the image is a full-page spread of him in the middle of a maze. There's a lake in the middle of a maze or a pond. And there's dead bodies strewn all around on the floor. And him and another guy are aiming their guns at each other. And it's just that's how it opens. So it drops you straight into what is almost the end of the book. Does that make sense? And I love it when they do that. There's like heavy foreshadowing. You then flash back to the detective arriving in Barcelona, and he meets a glamorous sort of female police officer who briefs him on the case. And he then meets his ex-wife of 26 years ago. He meets with her, and he gets a text from his now wife who's worried about him. So what they do there is they do it so well. They flesh out this character in the first few pages. You know who he is, what he's about, what his background is, why he's there, and that he's going to get bloody. And it does it so well by just like setting up the whole thing properly. Just the rhyme is so on point. You then get an intro of a sort of tattooed gang leader who's the guy who features on the cover. I have to say, I think maybe the cover gives a little bit too much away of the story. It's a sort of tattoo, like when these sort of gang members, I think they're Puerto Rican or something like that, and they're covered in facial tattoos, and he's kissing or looking directly into the eyes of a dead girl who's in a bath full of blood. And to me, that gave a little bit too much away because it ruined a little bit of the mystery. And it also gave it a kind of almost like a satanic look to it, which the book really isn't. It doesn't really have that. But the twist, literally from point one, the twists start coming. You think, where is the wife? Why is she involved in this? Is it a suicide? Where do all the bodies come from on page one? And it really grabs you from the start. It's got that sort of feeling like the Parker books or something like that, a loner. He's a real loner. He doesn't really rely on anyone else, the prison cop. He's a little bit of a stranger in a strange land, although he does understand the Spanish a little bit more than a lot of the sort of other people would do. But and it's so full of sort of rich side characters. One of the best ones is that he hooks up with this taxi driver who drives him around. So because he obviously just got off a plane, he doesn't have a car, but he's got a cab driver who's like a part-time philosopher. And he's who drives him around Barcelona, and he sort of runs the ideas of his investigation off this guy who's sort of this sort of sharp taxi driver. And at one point, he gets out of the cab and he says to the taxi driver, give me something. I need something. It's been a bad day. And he says, show me a hero and I'll write you a tragedy. And he said, yeah, that's a little bit on the nose. You know, it's just sort of summing up the whole of this sort of character. When you get to the foreshadowed thing that I mentioned before in the maze, you begin to realize that this is really a book that's a morality play. It's got that sense of good versus evil. Does good cross a line to get the result it needs? And that's sort of verbalized by the villain. He says to him, there is no line, there's you and me. And while they're staring down the barrels of the guns at each other, and it's like so good. The writing is so good in this book, it really is. The art's got that that sort of sweet spot for me that is the clean, stylish, but it's not sort of photorealistic, and it's also not comic-y caricature. It hits that middle ground. The face is full just north of the sort of caricature cartooning stuff, but it really, really works. Everyone's very distinctive. It's really clean line. It's really easy to follow, and the sequentials work really well. And you get a whole tranches of it. They're just discussions and investigations, and there's and he's sort of wandering the streets of Barcelona, meeting some of the sort of scumbags of the area and stuff like that. And you begin to get a sense for it. And really, really good. It's a really good solid read. I would suggest it for anyone who wants to get into Europe comics. It's a nice one and done, and it finishes on some song lyrics by Jacques Brel. Which are sort of quite poignant. I won't read them out, but they're very poignant as to what has happened. And it leaves you on something you think they're not going to answer that question. And sometimes questions should be left unanswered, I think, in a lot of stories. We don't want everything sort of perfectly tied up, because it leaves you walking away thinking about a story perhaps more than you'd done if you'd realised something like cold, hard facts. You want the unreality of the world, really. Yeah, really good. Another triumph, another brilliant book from Europe Comics. It got released, I think, 2 weeks ago. 15 plus rating, 67 pages, full colour. Yeah, really good. So go to Comixology and have a look for that. Yeah, that's my one.
Nice.
There you go.
Yes.
My one was a Comixology purchase as well, and this one was Enforcer, number one.
I read this.
Yeah, Midnight City Comics. Yeah. Did you pick it up after I raved about it?
Yeah, and I'd say that's their only book, isn't it? That's the only thing they've released.
Yes.
Because I clicked on that and it's the only thing on there.
Yeah, so hopefully we're going to be getting more issues of this. Now, this is written by Brian Funk. Amazing name. The art and colours are by Artyom Trakhanov.
What a beast. What a beast that guy is.
I know, yeah. We're going to talk about that in a bit. Letters by Thomas Maurer and colours by Ryan Cody. For those wanting to know what this is about, this is Tough Luck Part 1. An Irish mob enforcer, Bobby Callahan, and his crew, the Lucky Bastards, are planning their biggest bank heist ever to steal an ancient artifact from Meridian's demonic kingpin of crime, the Underlord. What they don't know is that every gang in the city, from an infernal Italian mob family to Viking bikers and troublesome trolls, are after the score too. Already from that synopsis, you're like, okay, I think I know where I'm going to go with this. I didn't read the synopsis before I read the book.
I read it in cold as well.
Yeah. And obviously, you lovely listeners can't now, because we're going to spoil a couple of the details. We won't spoil any story bits, but for God's sake, read this book, people, because it's bloody brilliant.
I think this is going to take off, this book.
Yes.
I've been saying it about tracking off for a while.
Yeah.
And I turned down a page of his from Undertow, and I fucking regret that every day that I turned down that page.
Oh, he was artist on Undertow, was he?
Yeah, and Turncoat. You remember I did that interview with Alex Packnadel at Lancaster Comics, which is like 2-3 years ago now. He talked very, very, very highly of RTM.
Yeah.
And he says, and I, because of that, I followed him on Facebook, and he puts pages up and stuff. Fucking hell, he's good.
I mean, the art is absolutely flipping stunning on this book anyway. I think there's brilliant character design and sort of the detailed pages. There's no inch of panel space is wasted, but I'm not talking about like people noodling and putting in pointless sort of detail in the background. You know, it's all, there's a world being created, and for me, like, the art team, I mean, the colors look great on it as well, perfect sort of color palette, but they're destined for future work. I mean, certainly I was reading it just thinking, this has got BPRD and that world written all over it. If there's any justice,
that's about
the
closest parallel, isn't it? There's not that many comics out there that are like it. Yeah. And even BPRD and Hellboy are a little bit different to this, aren't they?
Yeah.
There's something I can't quite put my finger on. Yeah. It's a real detective. It's noir mixed with fantasy, isn't it?
Yeah. It's proper pulp, isn't it? It's like, you know, proper crime pulp. And this first issue very much set up story. I mean, we could talk about the art for days, but the writing on this absolutely sings for me. Story-wise, it's very much a setup issue. I mean, because when you're creating a world...
Yeah,
like,
with a lot of action as well.
Yeah.
It does,
But you're creating a world where you've got, like, you know, they're henchmen, basically. You're following the henchmen, which I quite like. You're not following, like, the lead, you know, the lead assassin or the lead mob boss or whatever. It's the down and dirty, the gritty sort of people who do the dirty work. There's lots of narration, but it's all in service of building up the world that everyone resides in. That almost, I mean, for the first few pages, it seems like a real world. It's only until, like, he has a meet-up face-to-face with a bunch of trolls under a bridge that I was like, oh.
It takes a while to get there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't realise that, because he just starts these, like, Irish crime family, isn't he? And you think, okay.
And, you know, it's got that wonderful sort of, you know, pulp sort of narration to it, which I love. So, yeah, and there are one-liners, memorable lines for days. So, and everything has a great rhythm to it. I mean, it's more like the sort of narration you find in Goodfellas. Do you know what I mean? There's lots going on, but there's a real nice rhythm to it. I mean, I sent the guys, like, just one of the panels, because it's all centered around this part of the city called Meridian, which, is that the name? I don't think it is. What was the name in Clive Barker's Nightbreed?
Midian,
that's what I was thinking of. So that's immediately that sort of, that came to my mind, you know, this sort of like dark place where, you know, there's trolls and there's demons and everything. But yeah, there's just a bit of dialogue of the main characters sort of walking through the alleyways, and it says, if New York City is a melting pot, then Meridian is a cauldron. The Italian gangs trace their power back to the Greek gods. The Irish mob still serves the old Celtic powers, but on Sunday we're all Catholic.
Yeah, that's a great line.
And it's full of it.
That's jumped out when I read it as well. Yeah, it really did.
You know, and it's full of lines like that. I mean, the characters are great. There's a main sort of posse which are led by Callahan, who you are sort of following, who seems like a sort of slugger, but then he's got the luck of the. He's literally, there's something a bit more to him. He has the luck of the Irish, but in no other way apart from in a fight. If someone starts a fight with him, he's always lucky in it, which is bad luck for the other people because he normally ends up killing them.
I think at one point someone says, this ain't going to turn out well, this whatever they're going to go off and do, which we're doing. And he says, it's all right, I've got the luck of the Irish. And you think, oh, okay.
Which I think it also clues into, like, when you see the logo on the front of the comic, the O of Enforcer is like a Celtic symbol, isn't it? So the great likable characters, there's like a witch in there, there's lots of you built up the gangs that are like, you know, they're the demonic sort of mafia, which I love about it, and everyone, even though at the moment they're just sort of introducing them, and you've got a sense of who they are, you already feel comfortable in this world, which I think is very impressive for a first issue. You know, I by the time it finished I was like, right, next one, please. I mean, that's always, you know, with independent comics, that's the double-edged sword, isn't it? You know, if you completely knock it out of the park, they always ask you for the next issue immediately.
That's always a worry as well with a new company that's only got one issue out. Yeah. I do kind of think, oh, when's the next one? Come on. Although they do, I think, as a teaser on the last page, they put the cover out for the next issue, which is always a sign to me that, oh, they got it. They're on board.
I mean, looking in the credits, it says sort of copyright 2017. So I'm.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Part of me thinks that, like, maybe they've got, you know, they put this out in print or did it independently.
It's not a translation or something, is it?
I shouldn't think so.
Did they not do the Enforcer on Kickstarter?
I think I vaguely remember that. Yeah, I think they might.
I'm sure it had money in it. I'm sure I've got it somewhere. When you're saying it, I'm like, I fucking read that shit. And I'm sure I've read it.
Yeah.
I think it's somewhere in the back of my mind, I've read it somehow. and probably in the fucking Dream or something. But I'm sure it was on Kickstarter or something. So hopefully, it's fucking.
Hopefully, we'll get something new, because I'm a bit worried, because Tracking Off is so good. I can't see why he ain't been picked up by Dark Horse or Image or something. You know, it's not working for him.
Well, I mean, hopefully. You know, I mean, I want his career to take off, but hopefully he's done a few issues of this so we can get the whole arc of this before he goes off and makes it. I mean, as well as all this stuff, there's an alley-dwelling vigilante called the Rook who turns up.
He's brilliant. He's my favourite character. like totally badass, rips everyone's heads off.
Yeah, and he just sort of turned up and I was like, what, we're doing this as well? And if that was
enough...
Yeah,
that's what I thought. Yeah, it ends with he's a whole comic himself. Yeah. You know, Rick.
Yeah. And then it ends with like a Lovecraftian tentacled beast bursting forth from the earth. I was like, right, okay, you've definitely got me now. You know, everything is a win. Everything is a win. So it was, even though obviously there's a lot of people out there, like James, who may have found it on Kickstarter, may have already read the issues or whatever. But for me, this was a bolt out of the blue and a massive reason why you should always take a shot on like indie books from like creators you don't know of. And like, and it's also the arrival of fantastic comic book talents that you're going to end up being massive fans of. And I think, you know, I wasn't aware of some of these titles that obviously the art team have done, and now I need to...
I think it's only a couple, man. I think Undertow is a fucking revelation.
I remember iFanboy talking about that one.
Talked about it really early days, I think I mentioned it as well.
Yeah.
And Turncoat is brilliant as well. Turncoat is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously we'll probably be hearing a lot more from these creators in the next few years. Hopefully I want to see some more writing from Brian as well, because, you know, if there's anything to go by, he's writing the sort of stuff that I love to read. So,
he nicked my name, because I was going to write under the name Brian Fuck.
That's a great name.
Yeah. Oh, you should put that on your business cards.
Fuck.
Yeah. But, I mean, for me, this is how you do, like, a debut book and a number one issue. So I highly recommend it to everyone. And digital, it's available on Comixology. It was $2.49, but it's worth every penny. You know, that's probably the maximum for a single issue that I will pay on Comixology.
Yeah, it's a bit. I did actually think that was a bit too expensive, to be fair. But
I mean, and most of them... Most of the gems that I found are normally like 69p. Do you know what I mean? There's so much good stuff out there. So always, whether it be Comixology, Comic House, or wherever you get your digital books, every new comic book day, be sure to browse that indie section, because you find some absolute gems. So yeah, Enforcer number one.
They need to get some Comic House in their life.
Oh, of course they do.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Sorry, the sponsorship, I'm trying to bring it back, Vince. Try to bring it back.
This has been the longest sponsorship ad we've ever done.
I'm sorry. I've totally ruined your fucking bit. But no, fucking Comic House. Get on there. We'll all fucking read it. We'll all read Comic House. It's amazing. We all have got it. Everyone that listens to this show has had it. And if you've not got it, why have you not fucking got it? Get it right now.
I'm just going to take that bit of audio and I'm going to play that every week where the sponsorship ad should be.
What are you doing?
Go fucking get it. Google Play or whatever the fuck you're on. Go fucking get it. It's fucking £3 a month or some shit. I get it for free because I fucking work for them.
I'll make notes on this, because this is going to be my script next week when I have to do the comic cast. Brilliant. So there you go, folks. Plenty of comics for you all to check out, and certainly for me. I've got to write the notes for the show notes every week, but every time it's like I'd make a little shopping list every week, which is brilliant. So, we hope you enjoyed it. Got a few laughs and a lot of information as well. Let us know what you thought, or what you want us to talk about. If there's anything we got wrong, maybe I said pronounce the name wrong. That's normally what happens every week. Even when I meet someone face to face, I fuck it up. So email us, awesomecomicspod.
Brian, fuck.
Do you know what?
How can you get that name wrong? It's amazing. It's a great name.
I'm gonna call Tony that now. From now on, that's how I'm going to introduce you.
There's a great character name on fucking Nathan Barley. It's Richard Iodi's character. He's called Ned Smanx.
One of my favourite bits of that whole series is where he says to Richard Iodi, you read books. What books have you ever read? And he went, Heidi and shit. The only book I can think of was Heidi.
I'll tell you what, Nathan Barley is a fantastic show, and also it's quite prophetic because some of
fucking us... Fucking still is.
Yeah,
still is. Yeah.
Still is.
There's still people wearing flip-flops on their head in fucking Dalston.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I wish I could quote some of the lines, but I probably can't, because the ones I want to quote, we probably can't.
Rise of the Idiots. Yeah.
The idiots are winning. But you people aren't idiots. You're amazing, and you should follow us on Twitter at the Awesome Pod, where we'll be announcing the next guests and maybe doing a few polls. Who knows? I did one this week, which was
didn't you?
Yeah, just a story writing poll, which was quite interesting. Probably talk
you
about
could,
that.
Bring both the ideas in together, Vince. That's the best way.
Shut up, Dan.
On that bombshell.
On that bombshell.
You can find me on when I'm not...
hang on. They should go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast and they should join the group chat, Awesome Comics Talk. And thank you for listening to us, whether it was on awesomecomics.podbean.com, on iTunes, leave us a review, subscribe, get the word out, because we love you and we want everyone to love us because we're sad and lonely and we sit here every Sunday doing this.
If I find geeks on Twitter, I always stick them in that group.
Yeah,
there's one today asking for a compliment. Masthead.
Yeah. Well, cool. You're a man of the people, Dan.
Yeah,
you can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on Pod Holding Your Sausage Hostage.
Seems quite appropriate for this week. And where can people find us online, etc.? Dan,
you can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
I cannot wait to read more of this new issue, Dan.
This issue's dynamite.
It is right up my street.
It's the fucking shit. I fucking love Vanguard. I fucking love Vanguard. It's
cheers, man.
I fucking hire you to do shit. You know, it's fucking amazing. I love that shit. Fucking love it. Fucking love it.
And that'll be a full quote on his next.
I've done a few bits.
There you go. I'll get that on a business card.
Yeah.
I've done some bits and pieces of you, haven't I, James? Like, I've done some artwork for you for projects coming up.
Oh, yeah, totally. We've got a... I fucking love your art, man. It's fucking incredible. Yeah. No, I do, because we've got a Kickstarter running soon, and I need to talk to you about that. But you've got a cover an anthology called Pure Dead Mental, because it's fucking crazy, fucking horror stories. I like horror shit, so I do apologize. That's... Sorry, totally interrupted again. I'm really bad for that shit.
That's right, man. That's why you're here.
Because it's like, it's really easy to get into the habit of just fucking listening to you guys fucking talk, because I do it every fucking week. I'm like, I'm like, oh fuck, wait, it's me. I'm on this show.
Next week you're gonna be shouting at your iPod and just thinking, oh, why aren't they replying?
From now on, it's ruined.
Yeah, you've seen how awful it is behind the scenes. So what about Tony, where can they find you?
SASEZOHYZ on Twitter, or go to Amazon or Waterstones and buy How to Make Comics for Springworth.
Yes.
Which we're very proud of. Went down really well at True Believers. Well pleased. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the books of the year.
Maui Boy fucking loves that.
Oh, mate. Thank you. That's brilliant when we hear that. That is like the best thing ever.
My wee boy's 7 and he fucking loves it. That's why I got it, because I was wanting to get involved in it, but that he fucking adores that comic and it's fucking amazing. And
thank you so much. Andy's a beast. Andy's great. Yeah, really, with the art, it's just fucking outstanding. We had a little meeting around the sequel, so we're working on a bit of a sequel.
Oh, hey.
Yeah.
There you go. Oh, cool. Right. You can find me online at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmouseforMars.com. And James, you've been an absolute star.
Definitely. Good. Just what I needed, mate. Yeah, ideal.
Absolute star. By that, you mean a total fucking prick. But thanks.
No. Yeah. And if you are, in the best kind of way.
Good company.
So where can people find your lovely face, etc., online, etc.?
So my Twitter handle's @GrandmasterWick, as in Grand Master Wick, as in Wiki, because I'm a fucking giant. It's grandmasterwick.co.uk, and you can find all my shit on fucking Comic House. Just type in James McCullough and Comic House on the app, which you fucking have to have, because it's a fucking thing, and you'll find all my comic.
And let us know where you're playing, dude, because you play with a band. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah.
The next gig we've got is Kirkcaldy, and then we're playing in Dunfermline. To be fair, I just fucking turn up. You know what I mean? They just. I've been playing.
What's the name of the band, dude? I don't know.
She Burns Red. So if you check out the band She Burns Red on, I think it's She Burns Red Band on fucking Facebook and that, because we've got a video and I look like a fucking mentalist because I wear a kilt and fucking big red fucking war paint on stage and stuff. And we're on Spotify and we're on iTunes and shit. And that's going really well as well. We played a gig on Friday. It was fucking amazing. We played this LA Sleaze band. Well, we're not LA Sleaze at all. We're just a fucking rock band. But yeah, it's good fun as well.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh, nice one.
So go forth and get lots of James in your life. And thank you very much for listening, folks. From James, Dan, Tony and myself. Have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. Discover some new indie creators. And as always... I'm not going to get anyone to do it this week. Stay, or not after what you did last week, Tony. And as always,
you loved it.
Stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.